Podcast. We are live with our first interview, our very own Peeny, and I'm not going to say your last name. I'll let you say your last name to us in a second. But the reason why we have you on today is because in your own background as an AI researcher, you've now led a team doing AI research, AI practitioners. You've seen the AI journey from its infancy, earliest days, the basic building blocks of a team and scaling that team up, and all the challenges that come with it. So you've just through your own work, you've accumulated a lot of thoughts and knowledge and what's going on in the world of deep learning, in particular AI. And we wanted to pick your brain today. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Our pleasure. So why don't you give a little bit of a background in your connection to AI and even maybe what precedes that, who you are, what makes you curious in life and how you got into AI?
Okay, so I'm Peeny Solomovic. In my last organization, actually I started from big data. For my whole career, I was involved in data. And after like 5 years in big data, I got in a new position, and built a new group for AI research.
How big was that group?
What?
How big was that group?
Like 10 researchers. Okay. We were focused in speech analytics, and it was like 7 years ago. And when we just started, everything was new, brand new. We didn't have like former researchers that made some progress and we need to copy from them. We just need to find academic researchers and to take it from academic to a business level products. So when we started from a brand new research and we tried to build a product from it, it was really tough, you know. Now we can say that any research starts from building a model and then training it to take it to production level. And in those days, we couldn't know what is the journey that we're gonna pass.
So you were along a road that you didn't know where it was taking you per se.
Yeah. And what I can say is that it was really frustrating.
Was it scary?
Yeah.
Were you scared in how you're going to demonstrate that you're adding value?
Yeah, because like the organization took the 10th best researchers that they got, and they gave us like a really tough challenge, and we didn't know if we can make it. Even us, that we had like a lot of passion and a lot of knowledge, we didn't know if our research gonna end in a real product. So after 2 years in this group, I got into like a infrastructure department, that our mission was to take all the little groups that started to research and to get into AI, their AI journeys, and to help them to with their struggling of taking the models from research to production level.
From training to inference.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really amazing to see that most of the groups had the same challenges. And with our experience, we helped them to get all the obstacles out and to manage to make a lot of profits from their AI models. And actually, now 6 years after, I can say that this organization is proud to be data-centric, and they are saying that every product they are gonna product is AI based.
Everything they're gonna produce is gonna be based on AI research. Yeah. Every product that they're gonna produce is based on AI research.
Yeah.
Nice. So that's cool. Thanks for the foundation introduction into you. I think you and Heise have already spoken about what you really want to talk about today, a little bit.
Absolutely, we did some prep work, and it's very interesting. I mean, your past experiences and what you've achieved in previous roles basically got you to the role you're in now, which to me is a very interesting one. So could you talk a little bit about what you're doing right now? And yes, disclaimer, he is one of our coworkers. We're very proud to have him on board, but he's very important to run AI as well. But I think in his current role, he brings some very interesting insight. So, but I'll let you talk a little bit about your role, PD.
Okay. So I'm the head of innovation in Run AI. And actually, as I see it, AI shouldn't be like only enterprise level product. It's like the internet 20 years ago. Anyone who used the internet said that, okay, now I'm going to use the internet to communicate with someone. But now anyone can use the internet everywhere for everything. Actually, we are podcasting this live through the internet. Mm-hmm. And we are not saying that we are recording the podcast through the internet, because
it's,
you don't need to say that you're using the internet.
Yeah, it's known.
Yeah, it's known.
Right.
As I see it, 5 years or 10 years from now, everyone will use AI the same. And it's going to be like...
Everyone, meaning children, grandparents...
Everyone,
I think, regardless of where you are located on the globe.
Yeah, not just experts. Everyone, actually, in every aspect of our life, AI gonna be involved. We're gonna wake up through AI clock that will wake up when it's the suitable time for us to wake up, and you don't need to put like the microwave for 30 seconds. You just need to put the meat or your food in the microwave and it will be in the best temperature. And I think that in these days we're gonna like do the things that make it 5 years and not 10 years from now. We want to get this future really faster, and I want to do everything to get anyone the chance to start today their AI journey and to make it the fastest they can have it without any obstacle or...
It's interesting because you said something very interesting. You said, we're not saying we're recording this through the internet or using the internet because, hey, it's like it's a thing. People understand it. It's fine. I think AI is becoming the same thing right now because, I mean, as I'm very aware, I know artificial intelligence. I know the technologies behind it, like NLP, computer vision, those kind of things. But my kids have no clue. They walk downstairs. They say, "Hey Google, turn on the lights." But they have no clue that there's like speech recognition technology behind it, powered by AI models. They're clueless. And I think that's definitely what's going to happen, right? Is that
exactly.
We're going to take this technology kind of, I'm not sure if it's the right word, but hey, Dutch, so not native English, but we're going to take it for granted, right? It's there. But it is going to make a difference. I think right now, me cooking pasta in the kitchen, it's like very boring, but I used to have like this clock, this timer. It's like, spit it up, 10 minutes, great. Then I switched to my phone, right, using the clock and a timer on my phone. Right now it's like, hey Google, set timer for 10 minutes. It's changing the way I even do my groceries. Like, open up the fridge. Hey, there's no milk. Hey Google, put milk on the shopping list, right? And that's the interesting part of it, right? It's really going to be the way that people will integrate it into their lives. And the faster we can do it, the better. And these are just like day-to-day things, right? I think when you look at AI and the difference it's going to make in healthcare, in safety on roads with like autonomous driving, there's such a broad way of applying it. And like you said, like the previous department you worked for, like anything they will do is like AI powered. I think that's definitely the future.
And building a team, probably very bright minds that you hired. Do you think that as all of humanity benefits from AI in the next few years without even thinking about it, do you think also becoming an AI practitioner is something that's going to be more accessible to more people? Because at present, it seems to be a fairly prestigious thing to do. Maybe it'll stay that way. Because maybe the challenges in how to be a researcher in AI are so intellectually involved. Is that the right word? So challenging. Or do you think that if somebody wakes up and says, "Boom, I really want to, kind of get st like learn how deep learning works and try to do some deep learning." Is it something that's accessible? Will
Absolutely.
there be building blocks that can make it more and more accessible to everybody?
Absolutely. That's what I'm when I'm saying that everyone will use AI, I'm not just saying that they are going to use products which there is AI
Not just benefit
behind.
from them.
Yeah. It's going to be much accessible from them. You know, now if you want to get involved in AI, the prerequisites are really high. You need to be an expert in
Right.
AI to get in this stuff. And also, most of the experts fail in their journey to get a beneficial product at the end of the journey. Most of them stop in the research and start another research. You know, like I know that 3 years ago, Google made an article that were saying that 87% of the research ends without any product.
Or a successful result. So, can I tell you why I asked this question, guys?
Yeah.
Guys, I don't know. Maybe you're thinking, like, what? So, my brother has a friend who now has a 14-year-old. And this 14-year-old, from the age 10 or 11, each summer when he would go to summer camp, I'm used to going to summer camp and doing nonsense, eating a lot of candy and sugar and playing sports. This young man, or this young boy, this boy goes to, now a teenager, fell in love with HTML at the age of 10 or 11. And then each year he had a summer camp guidance counselor getting him more and more into, like, kind of like a junior software developer. And I think to myself, like, that can't be possible. He's 14. And maybe there's certain things that are like more out of the box for somebody to do, HTML, whatever, nowadays compared to 20 years ago. But if we look 20 years from now, is that could a do you see where I'm going with this? Could there be a similar thing that plays out with like how we can maybe independently do AI research?
Yeah, you know, in
Because if
every
so, that's kind of
launch,
scary. Kind of cool and scary.
you know, with the great power, becomes a great responsibility.
Right.
But I think that one of the thing is that in each lunch that I'm eating with my friends, there is at least one guy with really great idea of a new startup. Like he knows how to fix the traffic problems, and the other one have a great idea how to get like air flight much cheaper. And if they just had the ability to try it, to take their ideas and to build a model without any necessity of expertise in AI, our world will be much better, much faster. You know, like I think 6 years ago, 6 years ago, I got into a friend who said to me, "I have the best solution for the problem of the accessing into the huge buildings in Manhattan." You know, like 10 years ago, the huge problem was the traffic in the elevators. But then after they upgrade most of the elevators, you know what was the barrier? What was the traffic jam?
Mm-hmm.
No, the speed gates, where they need to put their finger on to get access in the building. So I thought, I know, they have like 20 seconds between the outer gate into the speed gates. We can use AI to recognize most of the people, and then we can get rid of this traffic jam. You know how much time it needs put into researchers and to find out a way to check his hypothesis? It was like 8 months, and in this whole time it just started from learning how to use Kubernetes to build a model, and then it tried to deploy a model into production environment just to check if you can use the CV computer vision models in this problem. Like, he got the models from NGC or
what is this person's background?
Developer. He's a developer. He's familiar with computer science. Yeah, he knows how to build.
Would you
software.
Say he's an AI researcher per se?
Actually, he wasn't familiar with AI, and that's what's so amazing, that if he got the tools that we were talking about, like the tools that give him a software engineer, not AI researcher, the ability to access pre-trained models and to test them, he could do it not in 8 months, like in 1 week. He could just deploy his models, launch some tests, and then he got like a ready, production ready product.
So I think I heard this correctly at a conference just before COVID started, and I want to, I don't know if I've ever said this to you, Heise, but so I want to run this past you. So I was at a conference, and there was a big shot from one of the auto companies, a big shot in their AI, you know, global AI team. And he said, most of the time in these discussions, we focus on either training the models or production, you know, the inferencing side. This is more, I guess, prestigious or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. But I want to sit here and suggest to the audience that actually the first step, this is the big game changer in the world, the boring step of data collection and organizing, cleansing. Why? Is because the more that this is essentially done for all of humanity, where there's stable formulas that ensure that the data is prepackaged, clean, and it's just ready off the shelf, and anybody can take it and then go straight into training. This is, the more that this is accessible, the the cleanse data, and the more that it's accessible, and if you will, like you can just take it straight off the shelf like a carton of milk, that's the game changer, especially if we can do it as the world of big data is ever more, you know, ever expansive. Do you agree with that? Do you think that ties into this?
Yeah, definitely. One of the major challenges in AI is all the data preparation. I totally agree that to get all the data prepared, pre-prepared, it's much easier. But I think it's not the only barrier. You know that in nowadays, if anyone wants to get into AI, it needs a lot of money to buy accelerators like a GPU or even to use it on cloud. The costs are tremendous, and anyone who wants to use GPUs needs to learn how to do it and how to do it correctly. And if he doesn't know how to do it, like he needs to spend a lot of time and a lot of his budget on just learning how to use it correctly. I think that there are thousands of products, MLOps products, that tries to help the researcher to use all these tools correctly and in the most efficient and effective way.
And the ever-changing tool stack of AI researchers.
Yeah. If you spend like a week in learning them, you get another one in this week. You know, it's yeah. Amazing. They're like, and they are any ML ops tool has its own advantages, and they are really amazing tools that really can help the researcher got into the training training level really fast. I think that right now, as you said, most of the organizations stuck in training, and just few of them are using AI models for inferencing, like in production environments. And I think that the biggest challenge is to take the model from training into inferencing.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think that's the...
Would you have thought that, Heise?
Well, it matches the numbers we see out there, right? Yeah. And the one thing that I'd like to add, because you had this interesting mention about the summer camp and HTML and learning stuff.
Sorry,
I feel that that's becoming less of a problem as into how they will apply AI to something. And the reason why is because I think nowadays, and if I'm not here to give anyone parenting advice, but I think I read an article once somewhere that they said if there's one skill that you should give your kids right now, or at least teach them, it's coding.
Yeah.
And
right.
I'm pretty sure it's an international thing, but there's a thing called Coder Dojos, which I think anywhere like eight years old and up, it's like a weekly gathering of kids coding. It's in our local library, 8 years and up. It's in our local library. My son is doing it, and he's actually he's being taught Python right now. So I think and as more and more people understand,
you're eight. Well, hold on, and I guess this is not a big deal. Or many people are going to be listening to this, and you're like, yeah, no kidding. I'm stunned to hear that you have an 8 year old who's learning Python.
Yes, he is. He is on those Coder Dojos in a very fun way, linking it to games. But they have topics like collision detection in games, right? Because how do I know if my character hit a brick or something like that, right? So I think that
dojos in the future, can you see an 8 year old like doing NLP basics at the library?
I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is yes. I mean, I remember myself, I might be the weird one here, but I was coding at age 7 on like a Laser 700 system with like a course in basic. typing over like lines and lines of codes to a code to code a game, which I never played. So, but it's and so kids nowadays are being brought up with this coding and also the way of thinking, like the analytical way of thinking, which I think in the future will have no shortage of people that know how to apply models to something. I think the challenge, and this is where that's the interesting part, right? Without looking like 10 years in the future, but the problem right now is how do we, and I think democratizing is like the proper term for this. How do we,
Democratize.
democratize access to AI, right? How do we democratize AI so that anyone that wants to use it can use it? And with all these shortages in the world right now, like chips, GPUs, accelerators, power, there the focus, yes, data is number one issue. I think there without good data, their AI models will fail. But let's say that's solved. The next one is, how do I actually get the
Affordability.
resources to do this, right? And I think that's the interesting piece. And of course, it's very much linked to Run AI. But like you mentioned, Pini, and this would be my question. If we look a little bit more short term, right? Because you're ahead of innovation. Of course, you would like to look 5, 10, 15 years from now, but let's look a year from now. What are some of the innovations you see in AI happening in AI, and then not necessarily any like things we're going to do with AI, but to how to make AI easier and more accessible to people?
Okay, so as I said, there is now a really big wave of going onto the cloud environments, and it's much easier to go using cloud because cloud environments gives you the ability to access GPUs, for instance, without any big costs. You can just try using your models. And I think that right now, what we can give our customers or potential customers to give them the ability to access GPUs and just deploy their models is like giving them the, it calls like, I love to call it, serverless inference. When they can just drop their models and try it and then drop another model because,
And then go home without thinking
yeah.
about their infrastructure. Just can I give some context? Maybe people might be listening who don't have a background in computer hardware. So once historically, a company would buy very expensive servers where and they would host it on their own office at their own office site or called on-prem hardware or on-prem compute. But what's happening increasingly is large organizations, even universities, are opting to, instead of owning and operating their own hardware, I guess if you will, renting from big cloud providers, the Googles, the Amazons, of course, and Microsoft Azure, as a few prominent examples. That pivot has been happening at an accelerating rate recently. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And also we can see that most of the startups that
And for, yeah.
doesn't have like a big budget are starting in the cloud because
And they may
they
not have
can.
a huge IT organization to.
Yeah, exactly. They don't need anyone who manage their IT because the IT is managed by the cloud provider. So actually, if anyone want to get involved and try some models, you can just look in Google and like search for NLP model or a face recognition model, and you will find in the internet a lot of models, pre-trained models, and now they don't have the ability to try these models. Just
Because the barrier of cost of accelerators,
yeah, and
hardware.
also because lack of deployment tools that gives them the ability to deploy their models without any expertise in model deployment.
Mm.
So we need to make it much easier and much accessible for anyone to just test models and start using them like any other, you know, when you use a new a Python kit, not kit, import, when you import a Python package. Okay, when you want to test a new Python package, you just need to
kit is okay. It's package. A kit's also a good way to say.
Okay, so when you want to test a new Python kit, you just need to import it, and you can use it in your Python code. Any developer can do it, but if someone wants to test a pre-trained model, you need to be expert in deploying models. He needs to know what are the tools for deploying this model and how to approach this model and how the data needs to be when he send it to this model. And it's hard, and most of the companies doesn't reach there. And
yeah,
I think that's the barrier that we need to take out from the equation, and that's what help in 1 year from now, much more companies get their AI journey much advanced.
Advance their AI journey, get them a little bit more mature in their AI growth of AI initiatives.
Yeah, I thought there's what there's, and I think because we're this conversation is like amazing. But it always takes a little bit longer than you think, right? But I like to summarize it because
yes.
What you're saying is basically there's, and this is happening in IT and has been happening in IT for many, many years already, more like IT focus and now like more of a, like a pivot to AI is that there's more, there needs to be more abstraction. So we need to remove those complexities. We need to take those complexities of deploying it, the hardware, the resources. We need to take that out of the equation and just make it like next finish, right? As in, okay, model, try it, amazing. This is the data set, done. So summarizing it a little bit, we've already been extracting, like RunAI. I'm talking RunAI a little bit because, hey, that's where I work. So we've already been abstracting some of the complexities of getting resources to getting AI workloads to run on the resources they need whenever they need it, right? And yeah. And don't have to worry about if it's actually physically available. The next thing is abstracting those complexities of actually trying a model, and the experimentation is less building the model. The experimentation is more trying the pre-trained model, seeing if it gets the results I need in a very, very easy way. Therefore, removing even more barriers of companies adopting AI and developers using AI in their applications.
Yes, exactly. From taking from experts only to plug and play.
Yeah, right. Plug and play. Wow, if we can get there. It'll be a few years, I think, right?
Yeah.
But anyways...
Sure than you think.
Pini, it's been amazing. Thanks a lot for the conversation.
Thank you.
We want to end with a lightning round. Can I proceed to the lightning round of fun questions, Heise?
Yes, you can.
All right. So here we go. The magic lightning round. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What the hell? Okay. Name the person you'd most like to meet and have a dinner with, and that person could be either living or historic. And why?
Okay, so I will do it not living or historic, but from the future.
Oh!
I want to meet myself 20 years from now and to see if actually...
Oh man, I'm a little scared to do that myself.
Yeah, but it's amazing because...
I won't be in jail.
You can get much better perspective of the journey that we are doing right now. And I want to know if the civilization got to the position that I think that there should be in AI, but in a lot of other things.
All right. That was, you know, he surprised me with that one, Heise. Okay. Question number two. If you didn't have this career in AI, this career in innovation, what would you be doing?
I think that I would be a teacher.
Yeah.
Because as a teacher, you can change not only what you are doing, but what a lot other people will do in their future.
By being a teacher, you're an influencer.
Yeah, you're an influencer. You can change other people's life. And I think this is the most amazing that anyone can do. It influence others' life.
These are some pretty impressive answers.
So wow, far. Yeah. It almost sounds like we prepped them, but we didn't.
And just
but so we did it. I just wanted to add that. No, sorry. I wanted to add that. We didn't prep him. The answers are amazing. Thanks. See, this is why we need guests.
Right. And okay, so the best vacation you have ever taken was to where?
Okay.
And why? Or is it the place you most want to go is you haven't been yet?
Actually, I can't wait to the summer vacation.
This summer?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to be in Thailand with my family.
Oh.
And it's going to be like the first vacation with the whole family. It's going to be like a long vacation.
How long?
A few weeks. And I just can't wait. Yeah.
How did you guys choose Thailand over anywhere else in the globe?
I've been there in my honeymoon with my wife.
It carries special memories.
Yeah, it was like 10 years ago. And I remember that we said that we have to take our family when we got one. So this is the...
So your children are going to see where their parents went on a honeymoon.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. The best book you... Now, whoever watched our inaugural podcast episode got a taste of Heise. So, and of me, Heise answered this question by saying, well, never mind. Okay. The best book you've read recently, or maybe the best book you've ever read, and why?
Actually,
a book about AI. Do you fall asleep to reading books about AI?
Yeah, actually in the last years, I read only, academic researchers and
about AI,
like this, about AI and other things, philosophic. But if I want to do something for fun, it's less reading, but seeing movies and.
So you wouldn't read. You haven't read a book by Israel's famous Shai Agnon recently.
Shai Agnon, no. But,
no. Okay.
Yeah, it's been a lot of time when I read
a novel.
The last time, yeah.
Okay. All right. Lastly.
Great answer, by the way.
Lastly, and maybe my favorite question is, share with us an interesting skill or hobby you have that perhaps people who know you around the office or just people who know you in general don't know that you have. It could be a skill or a hobby.
I can fly. No, just kidding. I have a
private pilot's license. No. Okay.
I have a brown belt in jiu-jitsu.
Oh.
Do you know jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been practicing for years when I was a child. Yeah.
Wow.
You didn't even ask me that question.
I think I did. Didn't I say that?
No, I don't think so. Not in our first episode. So I have to answer it now.
Okay.
It's amazing. Bini is my, I think, my brother from another mother, because my skill is I'm actually a second degree black belt in karate.
Wow.
Amazing.
That's all right. So I won't make you guys, I won't get on your guys' bad side then, I guess.
Yeah. I started from karate, but I didn't feel connected to it, so
Yeah.
I tried jiu-jitsu, and from the second lesson I felt really attached to it, so I kept practicing jiu-jitsu for years, and even participate in some competitions, and I have a brown belt. Yeah.
That's pretty legit. Well, thank you so much to everybody who's listening or watching. This has been the second episode of our podcast. And Pini, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again for inviting me.
It was amazing.
A pleasant time.
Yeah. Very, very enlightening conversation. So until next time, stay well, everybody.